hello and welcome to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. This show is going to take you on an unforgettable adventure through the silver screen. I'm your guide, Austin Reed. Join me as we delve deep into the realms of Hollywood's finest creations and hidden gems along the way. Movies have the power to transport us to incredible worlds, evoke a wide range of emotions, and ignite our imaginations like nothing else. They capture our hearts, challenge our minds, and provide us with a much-needed escape from the ordinary. Flick Fix is here to celebrate the magic of cinema, to honor the art of storytelling, and to light up a passionate flame within each and every one of you. So grab your popcorn, dim the lights, and get ready to immerse yourself in a world of lights, camera, and action. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Flick Fix. I'm Austin, and we've got a lineup today that's equal parts spooky and strange. First, with our recent reviews, we'll march through dystopia with The Long Walk. Then we'll hit the field for some sports horror in Him. And after that, dive into something off the beaten path with the dark comedy Twinless. And because no October episode would be complete without a proper classic horror film, our spotlight review takes us all the way back to 1932 with White Zombie, one of the very first horror films to bring zombies to the big screen. So grab your pumpkin spice and let's get into it. The Long Walk is an American dystopian survival thriller directed and produced by Francis Lawrence, with a screenplay by J.T. Molnar. Based on Stephen King's 1979 novel written under his Richard Bachman pseudonym, the film stars Cooper Hoffman, David Johnson, and Garrett Waring. The story unfolds in a near-future America that has slipped into full-on police state territory. Each year, 100 boys are chosen to compete in the Long Walk, a brutal endurance contest where the last one standing is granted whatever he desires for the rest of his life. The rules are brutally simple: maintain a walking speed of at least 3 miles per hour, never stop, and never fall behind. Rack up 3 warnings and you're out. Permanently. Let me get this out of the way right off the bat. This movie isn't reinventing the wheel. The story structure is rigid, and if you're even mildly familiar with dystopian tales and maybe some slashers, you'll be able to predict a lot of the beats before they arrive. That said, I still found myself glued to the screen for its hour and 48 minute runtime, and that speaks to a few things the film does very well. First, even without major twists, the premise itself is inherently gripping. There's something chilling about how straightforward the contest is, and that simplicity makes it more unsettling than if it were bogged down with gimmicks. The bleak atmosphere Lawrence creates really sells the world too. It could have easily felt like an idea suited for a small indie production, but here it has weight, scope, and a palpable sense of despair. Early on, you watch these boys chatting casually, some joking around, others deadly serious, and it feels almost harmless. Then, as the contest goes on and the rules start claiming victims, the tension escalates and the casual chatter gives way to raw survival. That's when I realized I was fully invested in seeing who will endure and how. The acting deserves a lot of the credit. Hoffman and Johnson in particular elevate the material with their chemistry and layered performances. Their dynamic feels lived in, and their conversations make the long stretches of walking compelling instead of monotonous. They give the film its emotional core and prevent it from feeling like a repetitive march to nowhere. Of course, not everything lands perfectly. As I mentioned, the predictability is a drawback, but even more frustrating is how underdeveloped the larger world outside the contest feels. We get glimpses of America's police state through background details and brief flashbacks, but the movie never really digs in. It's almost as if the filmmakers were hesitant to confront the why of the dystopia and instead kept the focus narrow. I get it. The walk is the main event, but I was left wanting more context about the society that would sanction something so cruel. Maybe the novel dives deeper, but here it feels glossed over. All in all, The Long Walk may not break new ground, but it delivers a bleak, gripping ride with strong performances and a premise that still holds weight decades later after its novel was published. Predictable? Sure. A little undercooked in its world building? Definitely, but it kept me engaged from start to finish, and for that, I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. Him is a horror film directed by Justin Tipping and produced by Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw Productions. The movie stars Marlon Wayans, Tyreek Withers, Julia Fox, and Tim Heidecker. The story follows a young, ambitious football player, played by Withers, who's training at the secluded compound of an aging quarterback, played by Wayans, who is on the verge of retirement. What starts as a mentorship quickly turns into something much darker as strange occurrences pile up and the rookie is pushed to his absolute breaking point in his quest to become the next GOAT, greatest of all time. When I first saw the trailer, I was immediately hooked. It begins like a straightforward underdog sports drama. Uplifting music, inspirational lines, the promise of hard work paying off, and then, halfway through, the entire mood flips on its head. Suddenly, Jordan Peele's name flashes on the screen, the tone curdles, and everything turns eerie and unsettling. That trailer gave me pure whiplash in the best way, and it sold me on the idea of a sports-themed horror film, which isn't a subgenre we get very often. It felt fresh, it felt daring, and I was completely on board. Sadly, the finished film fumbles badly. After watching and sitting with this film, I could clearly see the bones of a powerful story buried in there. This movie could have been a bold statement about the almost religious devotion people have to sports, the crushing weight of athletic ambition, and the horrifying realities of brain trauma and injury. With those themes in play, Him had the chance to say something meaningful while also scaring the hell out of us. But instead, what I watched was a jumbled, uneven mess. The pacing is one of the biggest offenders. Scenes rush by so quickly that it's hard to get a sense of where the plot is actually heading. And when the movie does slow down, it drags to a crawl that kills the momentum. The tonal shifts are just as rough. One moment feels like a sports drama, the next like psychological horror, and then suddenly like a surreal dream sequence. Instead of blending these elements into something unique, the film constantly jerks back and forth, never letting dread or atmosphere sink in. The horror doesn't even feel earned. It feels pasted on, like someone shouting boo in the middle of a pep talk. And even when some symbolism starts to peek through, like lots of religious imagery tied to cult-like obsession people have with athletes, it all gets buried under the sloppy editing and lack of focus. That being said, there are some silver linings. Marlon Wayans is genuinely a highlight here. He throws himself into his role, delivering a performance that's both fun and occasionally hammy in the best way. You can tell that he's trying his hardest to keep things interesting, even if the material doesn't always back him up. On top of that, the film does have some striking visual flourishes. I especially love the eerie sequences where the players appear with these X-ray-style skeletons, showing their bones cracking, blood pooling, and injuries forming mid-play. Those moments are surreal, visceral, and genuinely unnerving. They really sell the horror of what's happening to these bodies in the pursuit of glory. Unfortunately, they're just flashes of brilliance trapped inside a film that never fully figures out what it wants to be. And so as the clock runs out, him ends up stumbling at the goal line. Sure, there were a few flashy plays, Marlon Wayans giving his all, a couple of eerie visual touchdowns, but the team never found its rhythm. The pacing fumbled, the tone was offsides more than once, and the marketing hype threw a flag that the film just couldn't live up to. In the end, this horror sports hybrid punts away its chance at greatness and limps off the field with a final score of 3.5 out of 10. Twinless is a black comedy psychological drama written and directed by James Sweeney. It stars Dylan O'Brien and Sweeney himself. The story centers on Roman and Dennis, two men who recently lost their twin sibling, meet at a support group. Both are searching for a way to exist without their other halves, and that shared sense of loss forges an unlikely bond. Before long, they're inseparable outside the group. But as the movie hints early on, things are definitely not what they seem. This is exactly the kind of hidden gem I love stumbling across. One of those movies that suddenly pops up with a premise that hooks me right away, and then, against all odds, actually delivers on it. Twinless is absolutely one of those cases. Now, here is the tricky part. I don't want to give too much away. This is a film best experienced with as little foreknowledge as possible. The writing is sharp, the characters layered, and the emotional beats work because of how well they're developed. It's not just about two men grieving their lost twins. It's about the ripple effects that loss has on their past, their families, and their current relationships. The film digs deep into who these characters are, how they connect with the world, and what it really means to rebuild an identity when half of you is gone. Every interaction has weight to it, an aura that lingers. It's a textbook example of psychological drama, but not in the distant clinical sense. This one feels raw and lived in. And that's important because psychological dramas are notoriously tough to pull off. They can easily slip into thrillers with predictable twists, or become too self-indulgent for their own good. Sweeney avoids both of those traps. Twinless never turns into a standard suspense flick, even though it could've. Instead, it stays grounded, committed to being human above all else. That choice makes everything feel real and believable, and it keeps the story anchored even when emotions get heavy. Of course, none of that would land without the performances, and Dylan O'Brien and James Sweeney give some of their best work here. You can see the weight of the character's grief in the smallest gestures, but also the strange humor that bubbles up when two broken people find each other. If I had to nitpick, the pacing does stumble in the second half, I feel. The film packs in a lot of revelations, and while most of them are satisfying, the slower middle stretch does drag a little. It never completely loses momentum, but there were moments where I wished things would tighten up just a bit. Thankfully, the story finds its footing and ends on a pretty strong note. Oh, and another thing, something that does not affect my score, but definitely affects my enjoyment. Twinless was filmed in Portland. Yep. That's that city right there, front and center. There's even a location that I won't spoil, but trust me, it's a real visual treat. And as someone that grew up in the Portland area, I knew the movie was going to be in good hands the second I saw a MAX train glide across the screen with its actual familiar sound, not some stock effect from a sound library. Those little touches make a difference, and they made me smile. Overall, Twinless is a moving and well-acted drama that takes a bold premise and treats it with care. Even with some pacing hiccups, it stands out as a story that feels both intimate and universal. For me, it earns a solid 8 out of 10. Stick around, because when we come back, we're dusting off an old coffin lid. Long before the undead were eating brains on TV, they were stumbling across the silver screen in 1932's White Zombie. We'll be examining not just the film itself, but also the very origins of the zombie on film. Ooh, so check it out. You've been listening to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
Programming like this is made possible by support from High Five Cannabis, your local cannabis connection, in Vancouver and Stevenson, Washington. High Five offers flower, concentrates, edibles, tinctures, topicals, and more. Whether you're new to cannabis or know what you need, their staff is available to assist. If you go to highfivecannabis.com, spelled H-I-G-H, the number 5, cannabis.com, you can learn about their specials like Munchie Monday, Senior Tuesdays, Waxy Wednesdays, and Loyalty Thursdays. Again, that's highfivecannabis.com.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
And welcome back. You are listening to Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. Let's get into the Halloween spirit with this month's Spotlight Review. My little wheel has landed on White Zombie from 1932, a film often credited as the very first feature-length zombie movie. But before we dive into the production, the story, and my own thoughts, I think it's important to step back for a moment, because when we say zombie, that word carries a long history, one that didn't start with Hollywood at all. So let's cue the music and let's get into this. When you hear the word zombie today, a very specific image probably comes to mind. A staggering corpse with torn clothes, maybe groaning for brains, or maybe sprinting through a post-apocalyptic wasteland while the heroes try to outlast them. We've been so conditioned by decades of zombie films, TV shows, and video games that the word feels like it's always belonged to cinema. But the truth is, the word zombie has a much older and more complicated history. The roots of the zombie go back to Haitian folklore and voodoo traditions. Long before George Romero made 1968's Night of the Living Dead, the zombie was understood in a very different way. Not as a corpse rising from the grave to terrorize the living, but as a person robbed of their free will. In Haitian belief, a zombie was someone reduced to a lifeless worker, a body without a soul, animated not by hunger, but by control. That control was usually said to come from a sorcerer or someone who could enslave the individual through potions, rituals, or magic. This idea was terrifying, not because the zombie would eat you, but because you could become one. You could lose your agency, your identity, everything that made you human, yet still shuffle on, endlessly laboring for somebody else. Imagine being trapped in your own body, unable to act on your own desires, forced to obey another's will. That's the horror. The term itself, zombie, is thought to have African origins, brought to Haiti by enslaved people. It may trace back to words like Nzambi, meaning spirit of the dead, in Congo language, or Zombie from West African dialects. For people who had endured slavery, the idea of being stripped of freedom, forced to labor even after death, was a powerful metaphor. It wasn't just folklore, it was a reflection of lived trauma. Now, here's when things start to get messy. In the early 20th century, as American writers and travelers started visiting Haiti, they encountered these stories of zombies. But instead of treating them with cultural respect or nuance, they sensationalized them. One of the most influential examples was a 1929 book called The Magic Island by William Seabrook. Seabrook was a travel writer who claimed to have witnessed zombies firsthand, describing them as dazed, hollow people working in the fields, controlled by masters through mysterious Haitian rituals. Whether or not Seabrook actually saw anything real is debatable. What's more certain is that his writing dripped with exoticism, racism, and a colonial gaze that made Haiti seem dangerous and uncanny to American readers. But the Magic Island was popular, and its lurid descriptions helped bring the zombie into American pop culture. For most Americans, this was their first introduction to the concept. Not the Haitian perspective, but the sensationalized outsider's version. And just a few years later, Hollywood picked it up. That's where White Zombie enters the picture. Released in 1932, it is widely considered the first feature-length zombie film, and while it absolutely plays into those exoticized, often problematic portrayals of Haiti, it also marks the starting point of the zombie on screen. So let's talk about how White Zombie actually got made. The film was directed by Victor Halperin, with his brother Edward producing. They weren't part of the universal horror machine that was dominating the decade. This wasn't James Whale directing Frankenstein or Todd Browning making Dracula. The Halperins were independents working outside the studio system. And that gives White Zombie a slightly different flavor. It's not polished in the same way, but that outsider status also let it get weird in ways a big studio might have ironed out. Now, the Halperins didn't have the kind of budget Universal could throw at a monster movie, but here's where they got clever. They reused a ton of sets and props left over from the bigger productions. Some of the backgrounds and gothic architecture you see in White Zombie, straight out of Frankenstein and Dracula. It was a smart move. They gave their movie a lavish gothic look without paying Universal prices. Now, the brothers managed to secure Bela Lugosi for the pivotal role of Murder Legendary. Just a year earlier, in 1931, Lugosi had skyrocketed to fame playing Count Dracula. He went from a struggling Hungarian immigrant actor to an overnight horror icon. His piercing stare and thick accent burned into pop culture forever. Hollywood wasn't treating him like a star with endless offers. He got typecast almost immediately, and White Zombie is a perfect example. The Halperins brought him on for a modest fee of $800. Not a fortune, even back then. But his name on the poster gave the film immediate drawing power. And yes, Murder Legendary is really the character's name. Critics at the time noticed how unusual and sinister the role was, and most agreed that Bela Lugosi's presence gave the film its strongest moments. The rest of the cast, however, didn't fare as well in contemporary write-ups. Madge Bellamy, a former silent-era star, was criticized for a somewhat static performance as the heroine, while John Herron, playing her fiancé, was often described as wooden. The New York Times review dismissed much of the acting as uninspired, calling the film puerile. Overall, critics tended to see the supporting cast as serviceable at best, with Lugosi carrying the weight of the film's atmosphere. And another interesting detail, the cinematography. Arthur Martinelli, the director of photography, had cut his teeth working on silent films, so when you watch White Zombie, you'll notice it uses a lot of silent era techniques. Dramatic lighting, expressive close-ups, lingering shadows. There's less dialogue and more visual mood setting than you would expect from an early sound picture. It's like a halfway point between the silent horror of the 20s and the talkie era of the 30s. The production itself was fast and cheap. The Halperins wrapped it up quickly, making the most of every borrowed set and every day with Lugosi. And when it hit theaters in 1932, it wasn't a blockbuster, but it was profitable enough to cement itself in horror history. Not because it was perfect, far from it, but because it planted the seed. The zombie had arrived on screen and there was no going back. So, let's get into the movie itself. If I'm being honest, White Zombie isn't exactly a masterpiece. The story is pretty bare bones. A young couple travels to Haiti to get married, only for the local plantation owner to become infatuated with the bride. Desperate, he turns to a voodoo master for help, who obliges by zombifying her. Of course, the plan backfires, the plantation owner regrets it, realizes the horror of what he's done, and eventually gets a taste of his own medicine. The villain is defeated, the lovers are reunited, and that's more or less of it. It's simple, it's melodramatic, and it doesn't always feel like there's much meat on the bones. And like I said before, the acting doesn't do the film many favors either. A lot of it comes off as stiff and cheesy, which makes it hard to fully root for the supposed hero. The one exception, of course, is Bela Lugosi. But here's the thing. Even with its flaws, White Zombie still has some qualities that hold up almost a century later. There are moments where the visuals really shine paired with editing choices that heighten the eeriness. I especially love the way the zombies are first introduced. Slow-moving, blank-eyed figures who just drift into the frame with those wide, empty stares. They're not snarling, they're not chasing anyone, they're just there. And that gives me chills. So yeah, White Zombie has its moments. It's not something I'd personally rush to watch again, but I think it's worth experiencing at least once. If you're a Lugosi completionist, or if you're curious about seeing the earliest cinematic take on zombies, this is the one to seek out. It's rough around the edges, but it's a fascinating piece of horror history. Looking back, White Zombie didn't exactly kick off a flood of zombie movies in its own time. It made money, it drew curiosity, but it didn't spark a franchise or a wave of imitators like Dracula or Frankenstein did. For a while, it was more of an oddity, remembered by horror fans, but not necessarily seen as a cornerstone. But over the decades, its importance became clearer. This was the first time a zombie had ever appeared on the big screen, and the way the film handled that idea set the stage for everything that followed. Later films like I Walked with a Zombie in 1943 would carry this thread forward, leaning into atmosphere and mystery more than gore. Then came the seismic shift in 1968 with George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. Romero redefined zombies as reanimated corpses that fed on the living, and in doing so, he created the template we still know today. But even in Romero's version, you can trace the DNA back to White Zombie. What's also fascinating is how the zombie has continued to evolve as social commentary. Romero used them to talk about consumerism, inequality, and societal collapse. Modern creators use them to explore pandemics, technology, and survivalism. So today, when we're surrounded by zombies and everything from The Walking Dead to World War Z to video games like Resident Evil, it's worth looking back at this strange little 1932 film and recognizing that it all started here. In grainy black and white, with Bela Lugosi staring into the camera, and with a vision of horror that was less about eating brains, and more about losing your soul. And honestly, this stuff is like a perfect Halloween watch. It's atmospheric, it's unsettling, and it reminds us that the monsters haunting us on screen are always carrying echoes of real fears people lived through. White Zombie may not be the most exciting film to modern eyes, but it's a landmark, the first shuffle of a genre that would go on and take over the world. That's going to wrap up this episode of Flick Fix. If you enjoyed the show and want to help keep Flick Fix and all the other great community programs on KXRW alive, please consider donating. Just head over to kxrw.fm and hit that donate button. Every bit helps us bring independent voices and movie talk like this to the airwaves. I'm Austin, and this has been Flick Fix on 99.9 KXRW. Thanks for listening, and until next time, keep watching, keep supporting community radio, and keep the reels turning.